in one age, called the Third Age by some.
An age yet to come.
An age long past.
A wind rose on the Geek at Arms podcast.
The wind was not the beginning.
There are neither beginnings
nor endings to the turning of the Wheel of Time.
But it was a beginning.
Hi, and welcome to this very special episode of Woolheads. I've replaced James temporarily with someone who's not nearly as woolheaded as either of us, my lovely sister Danica.
Hello.
Hi.
I was going to come up with some kind of like really memorable Wheel of Time entrance, but then I just decided to Uno it. Yeah.
Uno, no.
just gonna forget all the things that we have in the books and just use regular old American English. Hey, how you doing?
Well, as usual, there are spoilers a-coming, so if you haven't read the entire novel series, you should probably find a different podcast, unless you don't care about being spoiled, of course.
Yes.
But that being said, what do we have to say? I'm going to kind of let you guide this because I don't have any idea what you want to talk about.
Well, you know, I thought about taking all of the notes that I made. So I made my notes as I was watching the show again. I was going to make them into nice little categories. But I have a busy life and I did not do that. So I think we'll just kind of walk through them.
Okay. That sounds good to me.
So I have no knowledge of any kind of production techniques or any of that. I know this looks pretty, that I don't like, but one thing bothered me from the beginning, and that's the Myrdral's lips. Did they just turn the mouth upside down?
I don't know. I'm going to have to look at that.
I think that's what they did. I mean, like the rest of the face, obviously, you know, taking away the nose and all that, but I think they just turned the mouth upside down, the lips.
Interesting.
I mean, it's creepy and it freaks me out.
That would be subtle enough that you wouldn't be able to necessarily put your finger on what is weird and wrong about it.
Yeah.
So I guess success.
I think that's what it is. Now, maybe you have, with your eye, can tell me for certain, but that just from the beginning, I was like, there's something freaky about this mouth. And I think that's what it is.
So. I didn't care much for the mouths in general because the whole thing about the Myrdral in the books is like from the nose down, you can't really tell that they're anything other than a person.
I really thought that they lost some of the subtleties when they made things too overly obvious.
Yeah. I don't see this guy walking into Faldara and being able to pass for a guy in a black cloak.
And I suppose it would have been really difficult to make the cloaks not move.
No, yeah, I never expected that. That would be,
but
it would not only be impossible to accomplish, but it would just look like unfinished VFX.
Yeah, that's what I figured. But I'm like, okay, well, they got to do something to be like, okay, freaky guy. But, you know, I always thought it was, I don't know how it would come across in a video, but I always thought it was very intimidating in my mind that they were just so quietly horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And the open mouth. I've been trying to figure out what science fiction movie that mouth reminds me of with all the teeth. Oh, it's a Doctor Who episode. The first one with Amy Pond, the like snake thing.
Oh yeah.
I think that's what the mouth reminds, well, all the teeth remind me of.
Yeah. It kind of does look like that. Same kind of shape and like really narrow, curvy teeth.
Yeah, so if it like started barking without moving its mouth, I might be freaked out. But anyway, that's a completely different podcast, isn't it?
Probably, yeah.
So from the beginning, I liked a lot of what they did. I understand the differences that they made with like Perrin's character, but I just gotta say, if his wife is the one making all of that jewelry in the Two Rivers, she was really good at her craft. But so my theory is that Layla was an incredible jeweler, and that's why everybody in the Two Rivers has all these piercings.
Oh, there you go.
Because I never imagined any of them. I you know, maybe it's just my history, but I always put the Two Rivers as like small Midwest town type of culture with like, no, you can't pierce things.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of thing that we always do, or we project ourselves onto what we're reading.
Yeah.
So unless there's information to the contrary, you tend to see the people in the book as much like yourself.
Yeah, and I've assigned like different cultural things to different peoples in the books. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was really interesting the way that they interpreted some of them. And I don't know if it was their backgrounds of the people that were creating it and what they've experienced versus what they read the books as. Some of them I'm like, okay, like the Shannarans, I always thought of them. Now I can't even remember what I thought of them as in the books. but it was more, it wasn't as much Asian as I think it was more like Russian, is what I always imagined. But
I always had a really strong Mongol impression of the Borderlanders because of the cover art on the first edition of Eye of the World.
Oh, yeah.
And Lan looks very Mongol in that.
I guess that's true. I've always had a hard time putting Lan right in that. Like, he's always been something different.
Something else, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I know he was brought up nearby, or born nearby, brought up there. But I always ignored the art on the books.
That's a wise move. The art on the German editions is gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
But Daryl Sweet's covers, it's like he had a completely different Rand on every cover.
Yes. For the most part, you know, I like where they took things. But there are a few things. Like when they start off at the beginning, there was a big thing about how the whole town, when the Trollocs showed up, the whole town went and fought. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, where are all their pickaxes? They've got to have something nearby. And they're all running and screaming. And you see the women circle fighting. But I'm like, everybody should be fighting. What's all this running and hiding? I thought that they did a disservice to the people. I mean, obviously, they were overrun either way. Yeah. But some of the things that they changed, okay, making the kids older makes sense. Mm-hmm. Making the addition of Layla. I don't like the change to Matt's parents, particularly his father.
Yeah, terrible in my opinion.
I don't think that added anything. And that's what I really think it comes down to. There's a lot of places where they wanted to create drama or create more sexual content and things. And I'm like, it doesn't really add anything to the show.
In light of the last episode or second to last episode where Matt has his visions and he's struggling with not becoming like his father, or it's, I don't know exactly what it was going on there. If he was seeing alternate lives of himself, like he did through the portal stones. Mm-hmm. I thought that made his dad's thing a little bit more palatable because it's like, you're starting to see, okay, he does have the show's character has that. What do we call it in the Pentecostal vernacular, the generational curse.
Yeah.
Of not wanting to become his father and seeing his father in himself and having to try and reject that.
But I really think that they've lost something when they moved it that direction. Mm-hmm. They took it so far. I mean, like, he's a hero of the horn. He's got 1,000 lives that he lives that he's supposed to remember. And it's focusing just on this one life. Mm-hmm. And it's taking the hero part of Matt out. And making him more, I mean, I think that it's trying to make him more human, more, put in some more, I don't know, what exactly.
I thought it made him less human because I really liked Matt's a much more complex character in the book than he's expressed in the show. I do like what the new guy is doing with it. I think he's mixing in more of that complexity, but this tragic backstory thing is hackneyed.
Yeah, I think that it's just a trope that they added in that didn't need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And
it robs us of a great character in Abel Coughlin, too.
Yeah, yeah, which I can understand if they were like, well, we're probably not going to put him in because it's yet another person.
Mm-hmm.
But even just the fact that, I mean, these are just supposed to be three simple country boys. And now we're adding in, of course, the girls to make them a little bit more important at the beginning. But the fact that they're thrown into these things, but they were all supposed to be very similar. Mm-hmm. And you're not supposed to see darkness in one of them. it's supposed to just be just normal kids. And I really feel like because they've decided to add this in, they, one, took away the power of the dagger.
Right. Absolutely.
But they also took away the heroism of Met and this whole idea of reincarnation of these heroes. And I'm curious about where they're going to take it.
Mm-hmm.
But
I don't think Matt was a hero of the horn. There was no indications of that in the book.
You don't think so?
No, because remember at Falm, Hawkwing specifically talked to Rand as Luce Theron.
Yeah.
But he didn't address Matt.
I thought there were
times. I think he said something like, if this goes well, you might become one of us to him at some point.
I was thinking that there was something along the lines of, like, I know in the show, it seems like there was something about we fought together before, but mm-hmm. I was thinking there was something like that in the book somewhere, but I might.
No, he just had all those memories that the snakes and foxes had harvested from other people that had visited, and they stuffed them into his head.
All right. Oh, I forgot about the snakes and foxes. Those things creep me out.
I hope we get to see them in some form. I think they're going to skip the Stone of Tyr. I'm certain they're going to skip the Stone of Tyr because they're going to the Isle Waste in the next season.
Yeah. Yeah, I know James is going to be disappointed about that.
Yeah. It's going to change the ending. I mean, if they don't have Kalendor, I guess that they can still work it in somewhere else.
Yeah. I mean, they've changed so many things and still managed to have Rand wake up with Elaine above him. And I'm like, well, that's kind of not exactly falling in her garden, but okay.
close enough.
Yeah. And that's one of those changes that I am struggling with. Okay. So we've seen Nynaeve get overwhelmed with emotion and use her powers.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows that when she gets overwhelmed with her emotion, her powers will work. But she can't find a reason to make herself mad in any of these circumstances.
Well, I think she's got the problem of her fear being the overriding emotion she's feeling.
Maybe.
It's got to be the anger at the forefront, and she hasn't learned how to really tap that, I guess.
Well, she's spending enough time angry.
Yeah.
And there was one amusing thing that happened at the beginning when she talks about, she's talking to Leandrin about her accent. She keeps referring to her peasant accent. And I'm like, you are speaking with the same accent as everybody else. So, I mean, I don't know what your attitude's about. Y'all sound the same. Is there some kind of subtlety there?
Yeah, it's a really subtle difference in the way she pronounces the letter O.
Ah, that's what it is. You got to get that umlaut on there. Well, that's basically my first page.
There was a thing in the books about Leandrin's accent because when she gets mad, she falls back into the Terrabonner thing where she puts the words in the wrong order and uses too many pronouns. And I think they were trying to kind of nod to that.
Yeah. And I don't know I understand there's like, if you put in too many accents, it messes with our brains. It makes it difficult to follow.
Mm-hmm.
I do appreciate that at least some of them, you know, we have a little bit of differentiation.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, who's got the peasant accent? What makes your accent different? Because I'm not catching it, and I've got a pretty good ear for that kind of stuff. I'm going to just start telling people, you know, is it because of my peasant accent? Is that what you don't like?
Yep.
I mean, it was
page two.
Yeah. So the white cloaks, they are so icky.
Yes, they are.
I think they nailed that.
Mm-hmm.
From the first moment, I'm like, you know, nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. And I just, all I could write was icky.
The guy playing Valda is fantastic.
Oh,
he is so creepy.
So good. I love it and hate it. And I I want to skip over him eating that bird, and I also want to watch it like 20 times. Like, who decided that this was going to need to be on camera?
Just, it was the same cinematographer who did that scene from the Return of the King with the Steward of Gondor.
Oh, yes. Eating
that cherry tomato.
Same exact feeling. and that aspect of it, like the things with the bats and like the choking up the bats. Yeah. And I'm just like, this little bit of horror thriller type stuff. It tugs at that fascination I've got. Like, I have this itch of, I want to see more of this, and I absolutely cannot handle it. The bats in particular, like, I thought the White Cloaks were just right on what I thought with the books, but that whole bat thing, I'm like, oh, that's so much worse than anything I remember reading.
Yeah.
But so I think the White Cloaks were probably, and Valda was the most accurate casting, but the worst casting choice in the whole show is Bella. I mean, they call her Bella. Mm-hmm.
She's like,
that's not a pony.
Yeah. That's just a horse.
Looks exactly like Mandarb. It's the same as I don't remember what Maureen's horse's name was.
Aldib,
yeah. But I'm like, they're identical. I mean, at least Mandarb was black and the others were white. But I'm like, this is no little farm pony.
Mm-hmm.
I get for the fact that it would probably be hard to get the we're all running together shot with an actual pony. But yeah. At least get a shaggier type or something.
I think they could have shot that. Maybe not like with like a really tiny pony, but.
But I always imagined Bella was shaggier, or at least brown. Something that doesn't look quite so
majestic.
Yeah. I mean, even if just a paint or something, you know, I was. At the first time I watched it, I did not catch them call her Bella. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, I guess they just decided they didn't need her. But then the second time through, I'm like, oh, that's not right. I had a very, very strong, it's like, what was the pony in Lord of the Rings?
Bill,
you know, I have this attachment to Bill and Bella, and they got to be right. Mm-hmm. What did you think about Min?
I'm torn on Min. I don't think that she's got the same kind of. I don't see this woman tweaking Rand's nose as much as the books Min did. The like best friend flirtatious thing that she had going on for so much of the story.
Yeah, and she's doing that with Matt. I mean, because that's who her relationship is with. But I'm wondering what they're going to do with her, because obviously they've nodded towards that relationship in the future with mm-hmm. Rand. But it's I'm glad that they're weaving her in after having skipped Baerlon. But I'm not sure that I get.
I definitely don't see her being able to pull off the Elmendretta.
Yeah.
Charade that she does on the White Tower.
Yeah, I don't think so. Not at all. Well, and really, I don't think that they're going to bring that up at all with what they've done in the Tower.
That's going to go a completely different direction, I think.
Yeah. So when they go to Shadar Logoth, did you catch the first time through, did you hear Fain whistling?
I didn't there. I heard it in another place later on in the season, and so I listened to it. For it specifically, I heard it when they were in the ways.
Yeah.
The first time.
Yeah, I heard it in the ways. And I mean, I had made note that he whistled from the beginning. But the second time through, actually the third time through that part, because that part of the show I watched by myself before I watched it with my husband. I've seen it three times. I was so surprised. I was like, oh, I didn't even catch that there. Is it easier to make darkness than fog?
I don't think it was a matter of it being there was a lot of things going on that what they chose to do was cheaper, just putting it on surfaces instead of having it float through the air and not having it like shoot out and grab people. Because yeah, the fog is more difficult because you've got to have that the interaction where you can partially see through it and people have to be able to. Yeah. Mishadar, I didn't care for the look very much because it really didn't match my ideas, but that was one of those things where, yeah, I can see why production wise, this was easier and cheaper to do it this way.
Yeah. I figured that that was probably the case.
Like I was like, well, ears.
I can't imagine that I don't know. They made it almost seem like it was like a vicious, like searching after them. Mm-hmm. Instead of that mindless just wandering.
Well, it did. It was motivated by life. It would move toward when it detected something living.
If it was close by, but it didn't like completely change direction or anything. Like, did it?
Right. Yeah. It would like send off tendrils.
Yeah.
But the main fog bank would just stay where it was usually.
Yeah. And so I thought that it almost kind of gave it a mind. Mm-hmm. That I suppose it added to the anxiety level of the scene, but I always kind of liked that it was just this massive awfulness that was just wandering around and, oh, hey, look what I touched.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a couple things that they've done like that one. I was like, okay, I can understand it. I'll buy it. But the addition of the dragon's fang in multiple scenes, like when we saw it, I don't know if it was in Teleron Riad or what, with the bats or the sheep. No, the Trollocs killed the sheep in the shape of a dragon's fang, right?
Right.
When
I think that was actually Fane that did that.
Okay. See, that would make sense. And like that showing up in Teleron Riad, I would get that. I have a little bit of a hard time of the cheesiness with, you know, Nynaeve kills a Trolloc in the sacred pool and.
Yeah. And
and the blood just comes up in the dragon fang. I'm like, okay, maybe production needs to spend a little less money.
Well, they had to do a simulation there for the blood anyway. So because you had the CG Trolloc in there bleeding. So you might as well throw it in. It doesn't cost much more.
It's a little cheesy.
And maybe it's another indication that she's strongly Ta'veren.
Maybe. I suppose that could be. I'm still adjusting to the idea of Nynaeve being Ta'veren.
I think it makes a lot of sense given the things that happen to the girls in the books. Because it's like...
I've honestly had
any... The number of weird coincidences around her is beyond belief.
I suppose so. I've had an easier time adjusting to the idea of Egwene.
Mm-hmm.
Being.
Yeah, becoming Ommerlin.
Yeah.
Like 19.
That alone. But I suppose it does kind of make sense. At least they didn't try and make her the same age, too, because that would not have worked
for
me. Yeah,
that wouldn't have worked.
Though I also, since we're talking about her, my favorite line is when Lan says, "Ooh, you actually tried to kill me." I love how she is so verbose and he is so not.
Mm-hmm.
That interaction, that relationship, that I think is the most accurate for what I feel like is just really good. It cracks me up. I don't know if Jason understands why I keep laughing, but it's...
How far into her test were you before you realized that she was still in the test?
Oh, as soon as we saw Lan.
That is when I realized it too. As soon as Lan was walking down the road, I was like, oh.
Oh, yeah, this is still. I had asked myself a couple times, like, is she out? Is she not? And then she saw him. I was like, oh, there's no way. There's no way.
I was totally hoodwinked until I saw Lan.
So I know that, like, her hair, does it bother you that she's just fiddling with it? She's not yanked on it once. It probably would hurt.
It would hurt, and her braid is a lot more complex than it's described in the book. So I think if she were pulling on that, it would just come unraveled too often, and they couldn't afford to put it back up.
Well, I mean, she's probably most likely, I would imagine that she's probably wearing extensions and, and that, it would be quite painful just knowing how much care goes into the hair. But I'm just like, man, I just feel like even if it was just some kind of a, not really yanking on it, but some kind of more than just playing at the very end. that seemed such, I didn't love, it seemed like an immature part of Nynaeve in the books that I didn't really love, but it was so core that it just seems like I can't quite reconcile it in my brain. I'm like, you need to really yank that thing. You'll feel a lot better. Oh, and Rand and Matt, the other one that cracked me up, the other line, when Rand says, they say all roads lead there, talking about Tarvalon, and Matt says, that's not how roads work.
That was one of my favorites too.
I want to remember that one in case I ever hear that whole, you know, all roads lead to Rome. That's not how roads work. So, Hopper.
Yeah.
When
not enough screen time.
Not mostly. Enough screen time, not enough relationship building.
Mm-hmm. Although when I did my reread, I realized Hopper actually did die very early.
He did.
And most of that relationship building happened after he was dead.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that we'll still get a lot of Hopper. But what was your response when Perrin was dreaming of Hopper eating Layla?
Yeah, I don't remember my response in the moment.
Yeah. I was horrified because
confusion.
I mean, the idea of a wolf eating meat is not the problem, but if the wolves were aware of Wolf Brothers before they become aware, then theoretically the wolves around the Two Rivers, if Hopper was there, would be aware of this Wolf Brother, and the fact that this other two legs was close to him was important to him. And I'm guessing that we're supposed to believe that he's in the wolf dream.
Yeah, I can't reconcile that myself. I think that was just a product of Perrin struggling with his battle rage, and he sees that's not Hopper. That's Perrin as Wolf, I think.
Except it's got the same markings as Hopper.
Yeah, I don't know.
So I feel like, okay, a wolf showing up. I feel like they could have handled that in a more sensitive way.
Yeah, in a more sensible way.
Yeah. Him being horrified that there was a wolf there, if it was nearby, he could have been worried. I feel like that was... it was supposed to get a reaction, and it did. But when you know what is going to happen, and I mean, granted, I didn't know it was Hopper the first time, but once they introduced him, you know, I looked at his markings. I figured out, okay, this is what I'm looking for with this, just in case they had other wolves come around. You know, I want to know who Hopper is. So when I did my rewatch and I'm looking at that, I'm like, sure enough, that is Hopper. I did not.
I was
like
not
that.
So rigorous in my viewing.
I'm slightly obsessed with Hopper. Like I absolutely adore that wolf, but that's not something that my thought was maybe that was Ishmael.
That could be.
You know that was
because he is trying to push on Perrin's misconception of what his being a wolf brother means.
Yeah.
So I could buy that. Headcanon accepted.
Yeah, I just got to actually solidify it in my brain so I don't get upset with Hopper. Tom.
Tom.
I loved it. Was wrong and right at the same time.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, you're like,
this is not the Tom I remember, but I like him so much anyway.
Yes, exactly. But then where did he go? I miss him.
He will be back in season 3.
Oh, yay.
He confirmed that he was filming and wrapped on season 3.
Oh, good. Because I love him. and I want to see more of him. And I hope that he's just as much right and wrong at the same time in season 3. So a couple things, or I hinted at it when we started, but the swearing is just a disappointment. We've had so very little, and I need more references to Mother's Milk in a Cup and other bizarre swearing and a little less of the actual words we use.
Mm-hmm. Hasn't been nearly enough spavined goats.
I mean, we should be throwing goats all over the place and sheep and all the other things. You know, I need some more wool heads, but I also need Rand to unstring his bow.
Yes.
He had it in his quiver with the bow attached, with the string attached.
It's like, you're going to pull that out and all of your arrows are going to go everywhere.
you're going to like garrot yourself.
I was disappointed in the bows in general, because I'm like, they made such a big deal out of the Two Rivers longbow, and you have to train for your entire life to pull this. And everybody's saying that is totally impractical for shooting from a horse, all of that stuff. And he's just got this little tiny thing.
Yeah. I would not have ever known anything about bow care had I not read the books, but you know, mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, you know, I want to see them. I want to see them string it in one motion, but they probably can't do that. They probably don't want to hire somebody to teach them how to do that.
And they don't have to get like actual you and make it with the 120-pound pull, but it would be nice to have a nice big stave and see them as archers, because it was such a huge part of the books. Not so much for Perrin, but even he was good with it.
Yeah. And I mean, Perrin still not carrying around an axe.
Yeah.
I'm like, this just seems ridiculous. I mean.
And they keep giving us these cool looking axes, like, oh, look, that's going to become Perrin's axe, and he leaves it behind.
A perfect opportunity for you to carry around an axe. Don't you think maybe because you haven't embraced the way of the leaf, maybe you might think after the many times you've been attacked that it might be good to carry around this weapon?
Like, yeah, I saw Dane carrying that axe with the cool engraving. I'm like, oh, well, that's going to be Perrin's axe. No, he leaves it behind. Oh, maybe he's going to take Ingtar's axe after Ingtar got no.
I mean, really, with how many times he has had the opportunity to have a weapon to defend himself and failed to do so, he doesn't deserve to make it through the next battle.
No.
Come on. I want to go in and just, here, honey, you take this axe and you just carry it with you. You don't have to like it. Take a hammer, anything. A stick? Can you have a walking stick? Something that you can hit somebody with. So when he met the Tuathan and Rain shows up, mm-hmm. I actually Googled. I was like, is he the guy that was the Oompa Loompa in Willy Wonka? It turns out he was not. But I was really certain for a while that I'm like, oh, they're Oompa Loompas. This is awesome. They were a little too tall.
I thought he resembled the Nox from Stargate SG-1.
Oh, I haven't watched enough SG-1. I don't know.
But that was Armin Shimmerman, so it definitely wasn't him.
Yeah. So he looks like a bunch of people, and yet is very distinctive. I love, though, what they've done with the wagons, and I think that was really good.
I liked their take on the Tuathan in general, mm-hmm. and Isla's speech was much better than it was in the book.
Yes.
Although I think she gave something similar to the same speech later on in the books, not in the first meeting.
But the Rumspringa that they have introduced, that's just from the show, right? There was no Amish tendency in the books.
No, that was new and silly.
I'm like, I'm pretty sure if you do that, they have to banish you completely.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, as long as you don't take a life, you could come back.
Yeah.
Because they'll take in anybody who agrees to follow the way of the leaf. And I think even Aram would have been accepted back if he had ever put down the sword.
Do you think so?
I think so. He wouldn't have been treated the same way as, you know, Tuath On from birth. But if he had decided to put it down and re-embrace the way of the leaf, Isla absolutely would have welcomed him back for sure.
Maybe. I don't know. I always put a little bit of the a little too much angry grandmother into her, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose that's, I mean, the show, Isla, definitely. The one in my head from the books would not have. But that might be my own history with who I compared her to. Maybe I have some issues there that I need to work through. But I really have enjoyed them. I thought that they handled it really well. I've even come around to Aram. I had a little bit of a shock with, I'm like, it's not quite who I thought. The casting was good. It just didn't mesh with my headcanon.
Yeah.
Quite as easily, but I've enjoyed them. So one really quick thing, Ishmael's obsession with breaking the wheel. Mm. All I think of every time is Thanos was right. Was that the idea to break the wheel? Was that in the books? I don't remember it.
Yes, but it came pretty late into the narrative. I don't think that Jordan had a real strong idea of what Ishmael's motives were at the beginning.
Well, because what I had remembered was we're going to set up this, the Dark One is going to rule and we're going to be, you know, he's going to have his person that's going to lead. So I had always thought, you know, they're just all fighting for who's going to be the right-hand man.
Right. And that's what most of them were doing even in the books. But they didn't. Jordan did make a point later on in saying that Ishmael was a philosopher and his goals weren't necessarily the same as the rest of the Forsaken, that he had a more cosmological approach to things.
Well, I think generally, I mean, the casting for the Forsaken is really good.
Mm-hmm.
Mogadian's a little crazier than I expected, but Lanfear is right on. I love the fact that when she can just create whatever clothes she wants to, she creates the most uncomfortable outfit that's possibly able to be worn. And like chafes when I just watch, but I'm like, okay, I'll buy it.
She's in Telaren Riad. She can just turn off the sensations.
Yeah. She's like, no, this feels good. But I really like what they've done with them. And I mean, speaking of clothing, I really like what they've done with the costuming. Obviously, they have had a little more budget for season two than season one. I'm so glad that they don't expect all these women to be just riding around in full skirts all the time, even if they're split. I always thought that was kind of ridiculous, but I've really, there are certain aspects to the costuming that I absolutely love. Not a huge fan of the Ammerlin's regalia.
Yeah. The stole is too subtle, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's there, but you don't ever notice it. And it's such a huge part of the symbology of the Ammerlin seat that I think they should have made it more prominent.
Yeah. Because no matter, I mean, like nobody knows what she looks like if they haven't met her. So when they see her and her clothing, they should see the colors and be like, boom, oh, I know who this is.
Well, that's why she has to take her throne around with her everywhere.
Oh, so she is not.
If
really
I'm not sitting in the Ammerlin seat, nobody knows who I am.
That explains it. I was like, that seems like.
Where'd this giant chair come from?
Yeah, why are all these people carrying around these giant chairs and pyramids and
the pyramid.
Like, I think I'll just take it with me. That seems reasonable. Where do they put that thing on the boat?
That does seem like a very Sean Chan thing to do. It's like, this is totally impractical.
Yes.
But we're going to take it all the way across the ocean with us.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the fact that now they've made it more than one cultural thing that, oh, we're just all going to carry around these giant thrones that are completely impractical. Okay. Sounds like a good idea.
Well, I was really confused by that scene in Kyrian where it's like, this is clearly her chair. What city is this scene in?
Yeah.
And then I realized, oh my gosh, they actually moved the entire throne all the way to Kyrian for her. That's ridiculous.
How many people does it take to do that? So with Loghain, did they combine Loghain and but they've talked about Mazarim Tam, haven't they?
Yes, they have made reference to the false dragon in Saldia.
So I wonder if they just combined the two characters because.
Oh yeah, and he was in the prologue on one of the episodes.
Oh yeah, yeah. I feel like the casting is exactly what I've imagined for Mazarim Tam.
Yeah, he was pretty
high. But I always thought Loghain was tall and blonde.
I never saw him as blonde, but I always saw him as really broad shouldered.
Yeah, that was part of it too.
This guy is a little Weasley. I kind of like him. I think what they've done is they've combined Loghain with Asmodian.
Oh. I wonder where Asmodian was going to be.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get Asmodian as Rand's teacher. I think we're going to get Loghain as Rand's teacher.
I find it a little sad that Lan hasn't been Rand's teacher.
Yes. James and I talked at length about that one.
Yeah. I'm like,
even aside from on the show.
So you are learning your sword forms from a guy and neither one of you have a sword and you're just talking about it, but you've internalized it. This seems.
Yeah, I think that's why they skipped the big duel in Falm, because
so disappointing.
There's no way to have justified Rand being able to beat that guy.
I wanted to know how he was going to fight with those fingernails.
I know. I did kind of like the way they did it. It was kind of Indiana Jones.
It was amusing, but
no, you people are all just going to fall down.
I did yell at the screen, and Jason's like, "The children are sleeping." Like, where's my fight? I was really looking forward to seeing how in the world they were going to manage to get him to move that sword around without the fingernail skewering him in the. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll never know.
We will never know because that's done. So the weaves. Mm-hmm. Season one, they were all the same color. But season two, they kind of started to add in some variation. But either way, it seems to be that anybody can see them. Do you think?
I don't know about that. I think they're just giving them to us as the audience, being able to see them.
But I wish that there was some way that they would express that not everybody can see the weaves. And I had to explain, okay, so now he's not supposed to be able to see her weaves and he can tell when she's. Yeah.
I think that they took that out. Yeah. I think that, well, actually, did they?
They haven't really said for certain.
Yeah. It's been unclear.
I'm even when Loghain breaks free, they seem surprised by everything. Mm.
But he seems to respond to Nynaeve's.
But, the men could always feel it when the women started channeling. But then when he starts to attack, it looked like the one who died, that wasn't in the books, that she
actually
saw.
But she was a totally different character. She was Karina. Was one of the hunters that the Ommelord had set to look for the dragon that was murdered by the Black Aja.
What was her name?
Karine. It was. I think that was the name.
I don't remember her.
She was only mentioned, and the only reason it stuck in my head was because I had watched the show and like, oh, well, here's the Aes Sedai whose
name
you
were reading
know.
It after. Die. Okay.
And I read it after. And okay. So when I read New Spring, that name popped out. And I was like, oh, she was there. She just died 20 years before this
okay.
story started.
Oh, in New Spring. Okay. Mm-hmm. That would make sense from what you said. Yeah, I don't remember. I've only read New Spring the one time. Mm-hmm. So I'm not as familiar with it. You know, I haven't read it the seven times that I read the first ones. But
we were talking about Loghain and being able to see weaves.
So, yeah, if there's multiple things about that. So, like, if they can see them, which it seems like they can, because Kirene, like, responds to, I don't know if it was, if Loghain gave some kind of a clue of what he was doing, but, like, she, when she sacrifices herself to protect her sisters, like she, it's like she knew what was coming. And it might just be because she's Green Aja. And so she knew what to expect.
That could be one of their secret weaves. I think actually very, very late, even in the last book, maybe they finally did discover a way to detect a man's weaves.
Yeah, they did, but they didn't know it at first, but they still couldn't see them. There were multiple things in that scene that kind of bothered me. Like, why were they just, so they know that there's all these people in the woods. Why didn't they immediately go to the cave?
Right.
You know, shouldn't he have been in the center of the camp so that they were protecting?
Shouldn't there have been four warders around him?
Yeah. And no matter how upset Stepan was, he couldn't have broken Loghain's shield with a sword.
That's true.
I mean, it set up Nynaeve's it set up what they wanted to have happen. But, you know, they took away the rule of 13 sisters to gentle a man, which just seems to be careless.
There were 13.
Were there?
I counted them.
Because I did too. Did I miss them?
They didn't see, you never saw all of them at the same time.
Okay. Well, then I probably should have rewound and looked at it again. Because I could have sworn I'd counted all of them, but
I think the most you see at any one time was 7.
Yeah. But, you know, when they were burying them, I counted again and I was like, I'm still not getting 13.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm misremembering or fooling myself.
I don't know.
But I do remember counting in that scene and being satisfied that it was correct.
Did you notice when Swan was little versus when she was Ammerlin, she not only when she got the stole did she get some more power, but she also got an accent?
I hadn't put it together.
I was like, oh, finally there's an accent. Wait a minute. There was one when she was a kid. I've been looking for them. But I really enjoy her character. I enjoy her casting. I love Alana too. Just I thought that was important enough to just make a whole note of it. But with Swan and the relationships, I feel like the complexity and depth of relationships in the books and in the show are great. I wish they would stop being so in your face with adding romance in.
Yeah.
I think it really takes away from the fact that their relationships are about so much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly between Swan and Moraine.
Yeah. I think I undercut that relationship in a couple of ways. And I had notes on that for one of the previous episodes, but
the books kind of hinted of those kinds of relationships happening among novices and that, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes they stayed and stuff. But I feel like had they been more subtle with it,
mm-hmm.
that depth of it just, it makes it so, so physical
mm-hmm.
in such a mentally complex relationship. And I mean, I don't even worry about like the gender thing as much as it just really feels like, oh, well, that's all that, is that all they care about?
It's too surface level. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to get, with the limited amount of screen time that they have together.
Yeah. They have so many moments, though, where they have like little things between them. Like when Swan says one of her fisherman phrases, and Moraine just kind of smirks a little bit. And, you know, those little subtle things that speak to so much more, I feel like gets lost.
The writers didn't trust the actors enough.
I think. Yeah. Because they're so good at communicating so much with so very little. And then it's like, no, we need to put this in your face. The same thing like with Matt and with Perrin and adding in those extra things to relationships that it's okay for Perrin to care deeply, for Moraine and Swan to care deeply and not have to wade through the physical things.
Yeah.
Because then we lack the nuances in their speech and in their interactions. You know, a little touch here and there was enough, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
But
the characterization between Moraine and her sister, I thought was really good because so much of it was played in subtext and expressions.
And I think the relationship I think that got the most disservice was for Rena and Egwene.
Yes. I did not like that one.
You know, the fact that Egwene breaks without physical abuse in the books was more devastating to her. And I felt like they were moving towards that so closely. And if Rena had started to lose her patience and lose her temper and then calmed herself and treated Egwene like the animal that she thinks she is, and that broke Egwene.
And yeah, I think they wanted another episode to develop that because they didn't have enough time.
Yeah. And I know that's an issue. I just felt like they were right on the brink of it. Mm-hmm. And if they had just assumed a little bit of like, okay, maybe some time has passed, we can let the audience buy it a little bit, like buy into it.
Yeah.
I don't think it would have taken all that much time.
I agree.
Because the amount of time that they took of her getting beat up physically, I think they could have done it if they had trusted the actresses.
Mm-hmm. And she was totally capable.
Yeah.
I don't know the actress playing Rena. She seemed kind of one note, but that might have just been her script.
I think partially that and what they feel like the Seanchan are, that all that control and stuff. But when she loses control, it seems to be against character.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked to have had that undercurrent, but then just keep that same steady. You know what? You're my pet and you are going to do what I want. And I just, it makes me sad because I feel like that would have been so much better. And it was such a disservice to that relationship. And on top of how many other times that they do that with relationships, like putting in things that don't really need to be there, that can be, that there's so much depth. And that's one of the things I love about the books is there's just so much nuance in the characters and they are running through it so fast. It's.
Yeah.
Which I know that I could spend. I mean, I would happily watch 5,000 episodes to get everything that I think should be in there. And the average person cannot quite hyper-focus the way I do.
Right. And you also have the problem of if they stretch it out for too long, all of their actors age out of the parts.
You know, you bring up reality.
Yeah.
And it's such it's just harsh. And
well, I think we're almost out of time.
Yeah.
Do you have anything really pressing that you want to bring up?
I have just one more note. The ways being opened by the one power was disappointing.
Such a bad move. It closes off so much plot opportunity.
It seems kind of counterintuitive that every time they open or close a portal that would summon the Dark Wind. But most of all, how did Peyton Fain get through?
Mm-hmm.
Did he touch the source?
Right. How are we moving the Trollocs around? All kinds of things don't work out. How do the Ogier know how to maneuver through the ways if they've always had to have an Aes Sedai to open the way?
Yeah. Which of the Forsaken is going to be bothered to be a chauffeur?
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Out on one of the coolest visual effects that I was so looking forward to seeing.
I mean, I can get
the door itself.
That would have probably cost a lot.
It wouldn't have cost that much.
You don't think so? Well, I mean, to do it the way that we want to, right? I don't know. I don't know anything about that.
It would have been relatively easy to do.
Well, then they definitely should have done it, because why in the world? Yeah. Why do we need Ogier in this world? And where did he go? And and why did we take him along? If all we needed to know was here's the garden, there's the door. Okay, we're good now. See you later. Oh no, we're going to have you walk through with us.
Yeah, and then later on at the end of the second season, all of his cool stuff happens off screen.
Well, and how in the world did the Ogier use them? Did you already say that? I don't remember.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I mean, we built this, but we can't get in. Whoops. We forgot to put a key that we could use. I'm just like, you know, I plot hole a little bit. But
a lot of it.
In general, though, you know, I believe one time many, many years ago when I was like, oh, I can't wait. Someday they're going to make a movie. And you're like, they're never going to put this on screen. There's no
impossible
way.
Yeah.
I would just like to say, nanny, nanny, boo, boo.
Yep. I was mistaken. They did it. And it's great.
They have done such a good job.
I did have a little bit to add. Tag on to the end of this. There has been some news about casting. This is rumored, but they have cast Morghese with Olivia Williams, who was Adele DeWitt from Dollhouse.
Oh.
That's an interesting choice.
Oh.
I think she can do it.
Certainly with the acting. Huh. Yeah. I can see that. That's interesting. I'm wondering how they're going to bring her in and what they're going to use her for, because they seem to have skipped past all of her important points so far.
Yep.
I mean, they've referred to her, obviously, and I'm wondering, are we going to finally see Gawain and...
Gawain has been cast. I didn't see anything about Galad. So they might be wrapping those two characters into the same person.
I would not be surprised. They haven't referred to him at all. Yeah. So I would assume that if they were going to bring him on, they would have at least talked about both the boys when they referred to them.
I can totally understand Elaine not ever mentioning Galad, though. She never liked him.
Yeah. Well, but it wasn't her that really talked about him. It was...
Shiriam.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Don't get me started.
The fairy godmother.
yep.
I don't know how to feel about her.
Well, but my opinion has been on this podcast already. So we
I just can't get
point.
Past the fact that visually she is the fairy,
she
godmother,
is the fairy godmother
from Cinderella.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. They could not have found a better casting for that. So I figured with Galad, he was kind of a one note character in the books, I felt like. So I don't think he's interesting enough to bother spending time on.
Yeah.
The things that he did bring to the story, if you're going to skip something, please, yes, skip that.
Honestly, after having reread the books, I could skip Gawain too, because ultimately I just really intensely disliked every decision he ever made.
Yeah, I don't really care for him, but I think really his purpose is just to create a romantic interest for Egwene other than Rand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm excited to see Morghese. I'm really looking forward to season 3. Do they have an idea of when that's going to come out?
I have not seen any release dates yet, no.
Well, I am impatient, and really bad at waiting. So,
same here.
I will be miserable until that point. No, or I'll completely forget about it because I've got other things right. to focus on and books to read and shows to watch. And then I'll be like, wow. Oh, it's starting already.
Yeah. Well, that being said, I think it's time for our sign off.
Yes.
I will find the song, or another will find the song, but the song will be sung in this year or in another year. As it once was, so shall it be again. World without end.
And also with you.
I believe the proper response is world and time without end.
Yes, world and time without end. Never been good at those.